Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, Kevin.
I got a great idea for a new Patreon ad.
Let's hear it.
You know how people like to talk about my dick on the internet all the time?
Not really, but go on.
Let's jerk off on each other's dicks right now.
No.
Why not? Are you trying to friend zone me or something?
Pretty much.
Is it because I'm fat?
No, I'm a chubby chaser, but it's okay.
Where can we go?
You can go to www.patreon.com/KevinTheStrange.
What can we find there?
You can find ways to donate to all things Kevin the Strange.
For as little as $1 a month, right?
Yes, sir.
And right now you can download my erotic horror story, My Angry Roommate, right now before anybody else.
Yep, just for $1.
At Kevin the Strange, no. Patreon.com/KevinTheStrange. Wah!
Hey, Kevin. What do you want to do about this podcast intro?
For reading to strangers?
Yeah.
I was thinking we'd download this broody-ass music. Then you'd be like, read to strangers. I'd be like, I don't want to read to strangers. I'd be like, read to strangers. I'd be like, I don't want to read to strangers. Then I shoot myself in the head. Pow!
See, I was thinking more like Reading Rainbow's theme song.
Like with LeVar Burton?
Yeah.
Like, take a look, it's in a book, that shit.
Yeah, but like, reading to strangers.
Reading to strangers. Reading to strangers. No, that's a terrible idea. Because it's Reading to Strangers.
Reading to Strangers.
Hey, gang, welcome back. This is the second episode of the Reading to Strangers podcast. My name is Kevin Strange.
My name is Jeremy Daniels.
And that's who we are.
Yes, it is.
That's, so, so we're still kind of working the bugs out, working the kinks out, if you will. We have now aired episode 0.
Yeah, I heard that. Wasn't our episode 0 we recorded, but hey, it sounded great.
That episode, it had, like, the length was there. It was like 10 minutes and 40 seconds, but when you open it up, it's complete silence. So I don't know how that happened, but let's hope that...
I'm having so many mic troubles at that time. Just...
Let's hope it doesn't happen to this episode. Let's hope it doesn't happen to any future episodes. So episode 1 has since aired.
Yes, it has.
And I also aired a very special behind-the-scenes origin of Humans Under the Bed, because that first episode I spent the entire time bitching about Bizarro fiction.
Yeah, and I just kind of let you go.
We didn't talk a bit about that story. And this
you were on a roll.
This is Reading to Strangers.
I got that.
A big part of what this show is.
Is actually Reading to Strangers.
Is a story we read to the audience every day. So I kind of want to change the format up a little bit here.
All
right. Instead of...
We're not going to have sex, are we? Well, yes.
Instead of leading this off with the ranting and bitching and complaining, because this episode is going to get a lot of hits, because it's called What If Edward Lee Was Used as an SJW Scapegoat? And that's going to piss a lot of people in the Bizarro and horror communities off. So they're going to come to this episode to listen to that.
All right, then let's sell our shit. And then...
So what I'd like to do is I'd like to do news and updates.
Awesome.
Talk a little bit about the book. Throw to the reading. And then do the Edward Lee bit at the end of the episode, after the reading.
Sounds good.
That way, and next week's episode is similar. We're going to piss people off with the headline and what I want to talk about. We'll throw that at the end.
Yeah.
And so now that the audience is nice
and... smart business right there.
Now that the audience is on the same page as us, let's get right into it.
All right, what's going on with Kevin Strange?
Man, there's a lot of stuff going on. I think I told you when you came in that there will be like 10 website updates this month.
Yeah.
We're recording this a week early. So I'm trying to think of where we're at in space and time right now. We're in the future. We're going to be traveling into the past.
The
20th-ish. No, we're in the past. We're going to be traveling into the future. Yes, that's
it. So, time travel.
Yeah, we're going to be time traveling. So... what has already come out? Well, this really cool thing happened early this month, before episode 0 even aired. I saw this crazy looking movie on Netflix called Demonium.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And the Japanese cult horror, I think, is one of it.
No. This is...
that's the other post-Jad. That's kind of like a spider film, I guess.
Yeah, this is like a, like I read the synopsis for it, and it was this weird, like, set in this dystopian future where magic and demons coexist, and all this, like, it's like a dystopian techno future, and the all the thumbnails on Netflix were these weird, crazy looking demon monsters. So I was like, you know, I gotta give this, a watch, and it's actually an Argentine film made in Argentina by a bunch of filmmakers over there, and. And when I watch indie horror, I do my best to spread the word on it. You know, I used to be an indie filmmaker. Okay. I used to make crazy, weird fucking movies. So when I see a crazy, weird movie that, like, vibes with what, you know, I could tell by the way the movie was made that it was made by people that grew up in the 80s. And it was a love letter to just crazy straight-to-video movies, horror exploitation slash cult films from the 80s. And so I looked up the filmmakers, and sure enough, the director of the film was born in 78, and the other movies he's made, like 100% Lucha. It's like a wrestling luchador horror movie, and he made another, like, zombie mutant movie after that. And it was just clear that this guy gets it. He's making movies in the ridiculous cult horror trauma Full Moon vein, but to see a brand new movie like that in 2017 and for it to be entertaining and not to just be a CGI douche fest made for $5, like, there was time and care put into all this. But anyway, this whole episode is going to turn into demonium. The point of the matter is, I posted this really glowing review for this crazy movie, and the filmmakers actually found my review of it on on Facebook, and they came to the site, they commented on the post, thanked me for it, and it was crazy because it's like the main guy's name's Razorback, and he's got this big scarred on his face and this crazy eye, and he's this super sadistic character, and he's like, and the actor is like thanking me. He's like, "Oh man, thanks, man. I'm in this movie.
Oh, shit. Razorback."
And I'm going, man. And then the creature, the big bad, the demon, I forget what his name is from the movie. He's actually the face I used in the thumbnail. For the picture, he comes and comments on it, and he's like, "Oh yeah, man, you get it, you understand what we're trying to do." I'm like, "God, Razorback and the demon are all up in my shit talking to me." So that went viral, that blew up in Argentina of all places. Yeah, so I'm not even sure that English is probably not the first language in Argentina, so I guess
we're gonna have to learn how to speak Spanish.
So I'm guessing that a bunch of Spanish speaking Spanish. Yeah, a bunch of Spanish-speaking people were going to my website, probably not having... Because it's not like it's in readable English. It's in Kevin Strange... Hey, gang! All up in that ass piece with another review for you. They're reading this and they're you know, barely, literate fucking English.
Yeah, I just had a thought. I heard that a lot of people in different countries are learning English through movies and websites. And I was like, oh shit, there's going to be a whole group from Argentina that would be like,
that up in that ass.
Dollars up in that ass. Fucking your brain piece.
Yeah, man. So that was really cool. Then what you talked about before that, we also made a post this month. By we, I mean me, made a post this month detailing my favorite Japanese ultra-violent splatter movies. That's up and live today in real time, not in podcast time. I released Korek and the Shaga's Steel, which is one of my favorite stories I've ever written by a character, one of my favorite characters I've ever written. He's my barbarian swords and sorcery fantasy character, Korek. And it's a story. I just kind of wanted to write a barbarian story for my new collection, All the Toxic Waste from My Heart, and it got weird. It went to weird places, and ended up being
goodness. Your stories got weird.
It ended up being cool. I released it as I titled it Lich Tits originally, but everything. I'm actually going to write novels with Korek now, and they're all going to be called Korek and the kind of like Conan, the way Conan did. They did the titles of Conan stories, you know, King Conan and the this or that.
Conan the Destroyer.
Yeah. So I retitled it Korek and the Shaga's Steel. And I put that out for free today as of the free Strange Saturday short story. Upon the airing of this episode the previous day, so this is going to air next Sunday, The audience is just like, what are you talking about?
Just say it.
So the day before this episode, I don't know the dates, I don't have them in front of me. The day before this episode airs, the third chapter. Yes, yesterday, the third chapter of... yesterday, the third chapter of Vampire Guts in Nuketown.
Oh, awesome.
Comes out, and that's really cool. I'm hoping that a lot of people that haven't bought the novel are checking that out, because that's a really cool story. And just a fun fact that I'm going to spoil and give away here: Korak and Guts are actually the same person living in two different universes. And there's going to be one more Guts novel, and there's going to be one Korak novel. And then the third is going to be a crossover. Guts is actually going to fall through a dimensional portal and end up in Korak's world. So we're going to have Guts and Korak, who are essentially the same human being, end up interacting with each other in the same world.
Awesome.
Could be years from now, but that's my goal. That's my plan. So you actually get a Korak story, and then the following week you get the next chapter of a Guts story. And I did that on purpose. That's not by accident. So that's pretty much what's going on in Strangeville. Is anything else?
I don't know. Any books coming out soon?
Yeah, you know, I've been trying to get this podcast together. I've been trying to get that off the ground. I've been doing. As everyone has seen, everyone listening to the show knows, I've been concentrating a lot of my energy on the website, on getting the getting KevinTheStrange.com just up and firing on all cylinders. And our web traffic is threefold. 2016's web traffic was threefold higher than 2015. I mean, it is a crazy jump in web traffic from year to year. And 2017 has started off strong too. And it's only going to get better. It's only going to get bigger with this podcast. With all of the free stuff that we're constantly posting, movie related articles, industry rants. The industry rants are really what bring a huge amount of traffic over, because
I'm sure somebody's listening right now.
I just wish he would talk about us so we could put it online and say that he's a bad person.
Yeah, well, the reason that that's so popular, the reason so many people come to that is, one, people like a train wreck, they like to see drama, mm-hmm. but nobody has ever been allowed to speak the way I'm speaking and still remain a part of the community. And while I'm sure that the powers that be have no interest in me being a part of their community, I ain't going anywhere. And let me tell you something, Jeremy Daniels, you're really going to want to listen to this podcast come Wonderland Award announcement time.
Oh, yeah. I just saw that you put them in a corner that you own. They're either going to try to prove you wrong and nominate, or do exactly what you said, and that's going to be wonderful.
Either way, you're going to want to hang out at KevinTheStrange.com come about April or May to see how I react to either being included on the preliminary ballot.
I hope they include you. We'll go and we'll get stickers and we'll have a fun time. Portland Nazis, here we come.
The Bizarro Bigoteers. This is what I would like to start calling the small group. Now, again, I have to preface this every time because people don't like to pay attention. People don't like to give you the benefit of the doubt. I like 97% of the people in Bizarro Fiction.
Yeah, but that 3% is going to be the fun part.
The 3% are the people that I complain about, that I talk about, and those 3% are the gatekeepers that control the speech of the rest of the community.
Bare minimum, they're the loudest squeaky wheel.
They intimidate because they're fucking editors. They're fucking editors. So they control what comes and goes. And if you don't say the right thing, do the right thing, treat them a particular way, you don't get published. Not only do you not get published, because most people aren't published through the big Bizarro presses, you just don't get to be part of the community. Most of these writers aren't published. They just hang out. They just want to be part of something. They want to be part of something that nobody else is a part of. And saying the wrong thing or treating people the wrong way, standing up to an individual that comes at you the wrong way, such as I have, and we'll talk about here on the other side of the story,
mm-hmm.
Will get you blacklisted. You just won't be able to be a part of the community anymore. So I don't know where I was going with all that. I don't know why I brought it up now instead of after the jump.
But so what's
going
to happen in this episode of Monsters Under the Bed?
Yeah, Humans Under the Bed.
Humans Under the Bed.
Monsters of the Babies. So I didn't look. I don't remember. I don't remember. I'm not
quite. A bunch of humans are going to be under the bed.
I think they're above the bed. I think where I cut it off. I was supposed to read. I was supposed to listen to see where this was at so I could talk about it.
So you guys are going to be as surprised as we are.
Anyway, yeah, I believe where I cut this off, the humans had just sprung up from under the bed, and Big Dexy, the monster's dad, is in a battle to the death with these humans, these crazy, twisted, war-obsessed creatures that have been living underground for 500 years, breeding nothing but hatred and violence. They've built themselves into these machine exoskeletons with only one purpose. The purpose is killing monsters. They vibrate at a frequency that can break through monster skin. There are some that have been modified to have their midsections removed, and they walk on their hands. They have no legs or lower bodies, and they act as bullets. These exoskeletons actually lock in like a transformer and create a big gun, and then these legless humans get loaded into the gun and melted down into a plasma and shoot at monsters. And I think that's what's about. It's either just happened at the end of the first broadcast or what's about to happen.
Oh, you spoiled the shit out of what you're about to
see. Well, I just wanted to set up the fact that you're about to get a human gun. You're about to get a human body part gun. You either just saw it or you're about to see it. And things just get crazier from there. There's actually going to be four parts to Humans Under the Bed, the Humans Under the Bed serial. So this is week two. We still have two more weeks, and the shit with Little Dexy and his sister his sister Willix and their big lumbering friend Buckstack, shit's gonna get wild for the little kids. You got anything else you want to say before we throw to the episode?
We'll get to the...
All right, everybody, this is part two of the Humans Under the Bed, and when we get back, we'll talk hypothetically. I'm gonna paint you a picture. I'm gonna illustrate a world.
An
alternate reality.
With pretty little
an alternate reality, if you will, where instead of the kid that shot up the black church, instead of him holding up a rebel flag in his social media, getting the rebel flag basically wholesale censored and removed all across the Western culture, instead he holds up an Edward Lee book. One of the most hardcore, infamous hardcore horror authors of all time. After this. Dexy was blind. The blast had knocked him unconscious. His ears rang so loudly he couldn't hear himself crying. As he regained his wits, he felt an immense pressure on his chest. Finding he could still move his arms, he pushed and the pressure moved. The chaos in his little room came into focus as the pressure, his bed, fell from in front of his face, allowing him to see again. What he saw was at least 10 naked, vibrating, hairless monkeys encased in a shiny material that he'd never seen before, attacking his daddy. Were these humans? The stories Willix had told him about the beings who once inhabited the earth didn't describe the savage things crawling all over Big Dex, as his mommy called his daddy, at all. Willix. Panic set in as the small monster frantically searched through the rubble for his sister. He pulled a jagged piece of flooring away from the top of a pile and saw an arm partially concealed by more debris. Dexy redoubled his efforts, tossing aside the fragmented remains of his bedroom to fully uncover the limp body of his sister. Lifting one last big hunk of bone that served as his floor, Dexy freed his sister from the mound of rubble. "Willix!" he screamed. His voice still sounded far off, but the ringing had begun to subside. Dexy began to hyperventilate. She wasn't moving. "Willix!" he screamed again, this time shaking her arm. The little fly girl stirred, coughing.
Relief surged through the small cyclops monster.
What's happening?
Humans, Dexy said, almost excited by the invasion. Willix's own eyes bulged. She peeked around the huge pile of rubble separating the little monsters from the battle raging next to their bedroom door.
We have to hide, she said,
pulling pieces of bone around them to conceal their location. A huge hand shot out from the side of the rubble. Eyeballs on the tips of the fingers blinked dust away. Buxtech shook himself the rest of the way free. He smiled dumbly at the other two monsters.
Hey,
he said, oblivious to the events transpiring directly behind him.
Don't worry,
Dexy said, smiling back. He pointed at his father.
Daddy will protect us.
Big Dex deflected a blow from a pair of humans with spinning buzz saws grafted to their chests using the body of the huge bearded man. The saws shot sparks all over the room as they connected with the gyroscope on his chest, causing an awful high-pitched squealing noise. Big Dex's tongue was still embedded into the man's forehead. It stretched across the human's head like a fleshy mohawk before it connected back into Big Dex's mouth another 5 or 6 feet away. The bearded human's mouth still hung slack as Big Dex controlled his limbs, having gained complete control of his nervous system. The monster crushed faces and stomped bodies into mush, even as he controlled the burly man's reflexes, causing him to smash the two buzzsaw-wielding humans with his mace arm, his other having already been sliced off along with one of his legs. His intestines hung freely from a giant gash in his stomach, and he oozed blood from half a dozen different mortal wounds across his body. Big Dex figured he could get a few more good kills out of the big man before he'd have to discard him and stab into the mind of another lunatic human. As much fun as he was having felling scores of these savages, he couldn't shake the feeling of dread from the revelations made inside the human's mind. He needed to find his children, and he needed to get them to safety. That's all that mattered. That's when the machine crawled out of the ground. It was actually 5 humans, but they each had machine parts grafted onto their already modified bodies. A pair of them had their left and right arms removed, respectively. In their place were what looked like cannon barrels cut in half down the center. Another pair was missing either leg in much the same fashion, while the fifth had no lower body at all, just a cylindrical piece of technology grafted onto its trunk that resembled the base of a light bulb. The bizarre people began to lock these various pieces into place, while servos spun and lights all across the weird machine blinked on and off. The legless human climbed up the half-formed machine and screwed itself into a round opening at the top, completing the unusual piece of machinery. Big Dex already knew what it was. A weapon. A flesh cannon powerful enough to destroy any monster caught between its crosshairs. The Overmind had created its monsters to eradicate humans. It made them immune to human weaponry. Guns, bullets, rockets, bombs were all useless against the hordes of terror. These humans had developed new technology. Big Dex knew because the bearded man knew. He saw the memories of countless millions of experiments over hundreds of years as the beings dwelling below the monster city turned their very bodies into weapons capable of killing monsters. Big Dex braced himself, grabbing the bearded man around the waist to use as a shield while extracting his tongue from his forehead at the same time. Lights all along the sides of the machine all lit up green, and the human screwed into the top of it began to spin. Smoke wafted up from the man's body as he screamed, spun faster and faster, and then, without warning, melted down into the barrel, skin, bones, and all. leaving the metal exoskeleton to fall, discarded, off to the side of the machine. A blast of molten flesh exploded from the barrel. Big Dex ducked behind the bearded man as best he could. The screaming, flailing man, now finally back in control of his own body, but held fast by the monster's huge claw, took almost all of the supercharged blast, turning him into a red smear across the monster's scaly chest. Big Dex howled in pain as he looked down to find that his enormous claw had been disintegrated in the blast. The heat of the fleshy plasma had cauterized his mangled stump instantly. Another legless torso crawled from the hole in the floor.
Ammo,
Big Dex thought.
They're using their bodies as ammo.
And if he didn't act soon, he'd be joining his bearded friend as a splatter on his son's bedroom wall. But the crazed, vibrating things were relentless. Worse, they didn't seem to give shit number one about their own lives. It was as though they enjoyed sacrificing themselves in droves if it meant the death of even a single monster. Big Dex couldn't let that happen. He had to find the children. Before the monster could move, another dozen humans swarmed around his legs, digging their claws and teeth into his scaly flesh, while still others clamped down around his feet at the floor, trying to hold him in place as the next bullet screwed itself into the man-machine. Seeing his daddy's hand melted off in the blink of an eye wiped the smile right off Dexy's face. He tried to scream, but Willix put her hand over his mouth.
"Don't," she whispered. "If they can do that to Dad, what do you think they'll do to us?"
Dexy began to cry again. Big Dex roared. He kicked the humans clinging to his legs like ticks against the wall, smashing them dead, only to have even more fling themselves onto his body. He cracked skulls and bit clean through exoskeletons, but the droves of animalistic humans proved too much for him. The human bullet atop the flesh cannon spun, and the lights along its sides turned green as Big Dex was pulled to the floor by at least 15 naked, vibrating humans. As the bullet man spun and melted, Dexy broke free of Willix's grasp and screamed out, "Daddy!" just as the flesh cannon fired. Buckstack threw his bulk on top of the smaller monster to keep him from running directly into the bioblast. Big Dex's eye met with his son's just as the flesh bullet hit him, pulverizing the huge monster's body along with those of the humans pinning him to the ground. The sound of the blast muffled Dexy's cry. The humans, those few remaining alive, shuffled back into the pit from whence they came. The flesh cannon disassembled itself, joining the others in the hole in the floor. After a moment, the bedroom was quiet once again.
"Daddy!"
Dexy screamed again. He pulled himself out from under the larger monster's body and ran to where his father lay. Big Dex was crumbled in a heap, his back to his son. When Dexy rolled him over, the little monster gasped and fell on his butt. Half his father's face, his entire arm, and most of his chest were just gone. Black, burnt flesh was all that remained. Big Dex's eye was open and unfocused, glazed over, lifeless. Then the hulking beast coughed and shuddered, his eye focused.
"Dexy,"
he slurred.
"Daddy,"
the little creature said, his voice hitching in his throat. He'd never had a reason to think his father anything but indestructible, a superhero. Seeing him prone and mangled was too much.
Come closer, Dexy.
The wounded monster pushed himself with some difficulty up onto his elbow and turned his body to face his son. Dexy did as instructed.
his little eye darting to his father's wounds and then back to his face, as though ashamed to look at what the humans had done to his beloved parent.
I have to show you. Then you have to find your mother, Mom, and show her. Understand?
Show me what?
Big Dex's tongue split. The forked appendage snaked out. He took hold of it and jammed the end into Dexy's neck. Then, in that moment, the young monster knew that the humans had their eyes pinned open to keep them from shutting them in the face of the monster race's absolute horror. Knew that the factory which produced the gyroscopic modifications grafted to every human being on the planet lay deep, deep underground and spanned impossibly the entire length of the continent. And knew just how many scores of billions of humans were down there, building machine bodies and flesh weapons. Their only purpose, to eradicate the monsters from the face of the earth, or die trying. Dexy knew everything. When Willicks and Buckstack finally chanced a glance around the corner of the rubble, Big Dex was dead. Dexy stood alone, his back to his fallen father. The little fly girl buzzed through the air while the lumbering Buckstack trailed behind her.
Is he?
Yes, Dexy said. A scowl adorned his features. He no longer looked like an innocent, scared child. He was calm, focused. He very much resembled his father in that moment, as though some part of the ages-old monster had transferred into his young son when he opened his mind to his boy.
He's dead. They killed him. And they're out there now, killing everyone else we've ever known, everyone we love, and they won't stop until they kill every last one of us or die trying.
Tears flowed down his sister's face, her little mandible parts, constantly moving like an ecosystem all their own, licked the liquid all away as she knelt over the body of her dead father. Buckstack put his big hands on her tiny shoulders.
I'm so sorry, Willicks.
Dexy turned to face the other two young monsters.
We have to go. Mom needs to know what she's up against. She needs to know how many of these things there really are and what they plan to do.
Willicks wiped her tears away, only for more to stream down her face.
How do you know what they plan to do?
Daddy showed me.
Buckstack stomped over to the window. Outside, the screams of dying monsters filled the air. As far as the big thing could see, humans slaughtered monsters.
If he couldn't fight them, what chance do we have out there? How do we even know where your mom is? We have to try. Dad thinks Mom and the rest of the Night Patrol will make their last stand at the base of the Overmind. That's where we're going.
Buckstack's right,
Willicks said.
We're just kids. If we go outside now, we won't last a minute. Any one of those things could kill us without effort.
You're right,
Dexy conceded. Buckstack rejoined the smaller creatures by their fallen father.
Best we hide and wait this out. If we wait this out,
Dexy said, turning his attention to the human corpses littered about the room,
there won't be a world for us left out there.
He studied each of them intently before moving on to the next.
But you're right about one thing.
He stopped above one of the humans. Its neck was bent sideways. Its eyes were vacant. When Dexy poked its exposed pupil, the thing let out a cry. but did not move. It was paralyzed from the neck down.
We do have to hide.
You're crazy,
Willix said. She hovered over her little brother, all six arms crossed in protest.
This will never work. You're going to get us killed, Dexy.
The little monster was busy. He was using one of his sharp claws to carefully slice open the human's midsection at the stomach.
We're dead either way, sis.
The human looked down in horror, screaming gibberish as Dexy peeled back its belly, exposing its vital organs.
Shut him up, will you? If they hear him, they'll swarm back in here and we'll be done for.
Buxtech had been staring into the chasm in the middle of the bedroom floor. It was vast. The sounds of human screams and machinery echoed off the deep walls. He plodded over to Dexy and put one of his gigantic hands over the human's mouth, muffling his protests as the Cyclops monster extracted his stomach and most of his intestines, discarding them onto the floor.
"Won't be needing these anymore, will you?"
Dexy said, smirking. After Dexy pulled out several more handfuls of guts, the human stopped screaming. It was pale and sweaty. It continued to gibber, but did so quietly now. It would die soon. Dexy just hoped it would hold out long enough.
Oh, okay, get him to his feet,
Dexy instructed. Taking the human by the shoulders, Buxtech lifted it up and held it in place.
I don't understand, Willix said.
Watch, sis, and learn. This is going to be awesome.
Dexy rubbed his hands together and then crawled up into the human's flayed-open stomach. Willix watched, disgusted but fascinated. Nothing happened for a few moments, and then, suddenly, the human's hand twitched. The thing looked down in horror as it flexed its fingers.
Oh, okay, now let go!
Dexy yelled from the human's guts, his voice muffled but excited. Buxtech released his grip on the thing's shoulders. It slumped and fell forward, but at the last second caught itself, steadied, and stood upright. It whipped back around to face the young monsters.
This is awesome, the human said.
Its speech was slurred and barely discernible. Blood oozed from its mouth and nose. Even though it smiled, its eyes were still filled with recognition and horror. It was not in control. Dexy was. Curled up inside the empty guts of the dying human, Dexy had fished his pronged tongue up to the point where the human's neck had broken and tapped into its spinal cord. He now operated the human's entire nervous system with his own mind. They now had the perfect cover.
I can't fit in there,
Buxtech said. Willix poked her head outside the human's stomach. Bits of intestine fell out and hit the bone floor with a soft splat.
You could change your size, silly.
I've never done that before,
Buxtech said, all 10 of his eyeballs wide with fear atop the antler-like hands on his head.
My mom told me never to try that.
Why not?
The fly girl asked.
I don't know. She never said why. She just said not to meddle with things I wasn't smart enough to understand.
Concentrate,
Dexy said, speaking through the human's mouth.
I know you can do it.
Buxtech sighed. He closed his eyes, balled his hands into fists, and strained. Nothing happened.
Try again,
Dexy said. Buxtech stomped around in place, cleared his throat, and repeated. Again, nothing happened.
Oh, brother, Willix said. This is a stupid idea.
Buxtech hung his head in defeat.
Just leave me, guys. I'll stay here till the humans are gone. You don't need me anyway. I'm useless.
You're not useless, Dexy said, grinning madly. You're the key to my whole plan.
The big monster looked confused.
Oh! Don't worry about it. Look, I've got an idea, Dexy said.
He steered the human body over to the mess of steel and flesh that had been people before Big Dex got a hold of them. He rooted around in the pile for several moments before extracting a loop of twisted metal.
Perfect.
Dexy wrapped the metal loop around Buxtec's hands.
Now you are prisoner.
Buxtec smiled. He wanted to believe their plan would work, wanted to trust in his little buddy, but inside, he knew they were all doomed.
And we are back.
Holy shit.
Yeah, so shit gets a little weird there at the end. The little kids, they hijacked the body of the last remaining human, and they decide they're going to put handcuffs on Buxtec because he can't fit inside the body, and they're about to walk outside right into the thick of the human invasion next week.
On Reading to Strangers.
So now is where everybody's fast forwarded through all that.
Yeah, pretty much.
And
let's see what Kevin Strange says about Reading.
So here we are. So let me get my phone out here. Let me make sure we get this information correct.
Yeah, because they like to make sure your information's correct. Not so much theirs.
Their information is irrelevant. My information has to be perfect, and we'll get into that. We'll get into that in just a second. So. This segment is called, What If Edward Lee Had Been Used as an SJW Scapegoat Instead of Dylan Roof?
Who's Edward Lee?
And who's Dylan Roof? So, the Charlton Church shooting, also known as the Charlton Church Massacre, was a mass shooting and hate crime that took place at the Emmanuel African Methodist Episcopal Church in downtown Charleston, South Carolina, on the evening of June 17, 2015. During a prayer service, 9 people, including the senior pastor, were killed by gunman Dylan Roof, a 20-year-old white supremacist. A 10th victim survived. So Dylan Roof, in his social media lead-up to his this awful, heinous act, displayed himself proudly holding the Confederate flag.
Which makes sense. If he's a white supremacist, they kind of latch on to that symbol. So,
as a cultural response,
we flip the fuck out.
The politically correct among us, the social justice warriors among us, among, you know, Western culture at large, demanded after this happened. On June 18th, the day after the shooting, many flags, including the, this is all from the Wikipedia entry of the Charleston shooting, by the way. On June 18th, 2015, the day after the shooting, many flags, including those of the South Carolina State House, were flown at half staff. The Confederate battle flag flying over the South Carolina Confederate monument near the State House was not lowered, and then they give a bunch of reasons why that don't matter, and the SJWs freaked out and started calling the flag and the refusal to lower it, even though it didn't have a functional, you know, it wasn't able to be lowered or raised, only removed or not removed. That's the context doesn't matter to SJWs. The fact that the other flags were lowered and the battle flag stayed up was a clear sign of systemic racism in the North Carolina or the South Carolina legislature. So they demanded that the flag be removed entirely because it is a symbol of nothing other than racism. Has nothing to do with cultural heritage or history. Has everything to do with racism.
It was a Civil War monument, a piece of history displayed.
Doesn't matter. It just social justice warriors.
Was on the back of a truck.
The politically correct police, the cultural Marxists, they demand that history be obliterated entirely if it doesn't fit in with their paradigm that they have, that they choose. And what they always do is they look at a situation and say, where's the bigotry? Find the bigot. Everybody, look real hard. Find the bigot. And they were able to find the bigot in the Confederate flag because it wasn't lowered.
But so to me, that seems like it would just be disrespectful for what happened if they did lower a memorial flag. It wasn't like they went to all the different memorials and tried to lower all their flags. You lower the United States flag and the state flag to honor people. You don't lower, like,
a monument.
Putnam Ford's flag on a pole. They don't lower their flags.
So this
is the only time a United States flag can be lower than any of those other flags as well.
You're using context, reason, you know, to talk about this, and that's not what
we're all six flags. Flags lowered. The French flag. All those expansion flags.
The social justice, I'm trying to figure out how to word this, because a lot of people are going to be listening to this and scrutinizing every word, because here's how, in the Bizarro community, here's how this game gets played. I make a comment. I form an opinion. An opinion usually as an emotional response to some call for restriction of free speech or some call for a public lynching, social media witch hunt, whatnot. And oftentimes I use hyperbole in the moment. I'm not going to sit down and do what I just did. I'm not going to open up 9 times out of 10 the Wikipedia entry and make sure that I have every factoid correct, because all I'm doing is stating an opinion. I'm not a journalist. It's not my responsibility to create factually accurate content. But the game we like to play on social media with Kevin Strange is you call his hyperbole the spreading of false information. So the reason that I'm hesitating here from time to time is because I know that whatever I say is going to be taken out of context and then displayed as the Bizarros, before it was cool, were pounding the false news drum, the fake news drum. Well, that's false news. You're spreading false narrative. Don't spread false information online. And what they do is, the reason that they do this, the reason that they do this is, and because these particular people think that they're clever, if they can point to your hyperbole and then reduce it to semantics, they can put you, or me in this case, they can put me on the defensive and they can get me arguing the semantics of the words that I use instead of arguing the point. What we get to do on this podcast is I get to say whatever the fuck I want. Regardless, there is no one to sit here and pepper me with these comments trying to goad me into a fight about semantics. Into clarifying my hyperbole. If I say, you know, hundreds of Confederate flags were removed from the marketplace, but it was actually only 148, they will try to argue with me and use the fact that
there were that many General Lee models that probably were removed, at least that many.
So as we continued down this path of insanity, not only was the Confederate flag removed from the South Carolina State House Civil War monument, Amazon.com actually removed the ability to purchase a Confederate flag from their website. TV Land took the Dukes of Hazzard off of their TV schedule because the Confederate flag is displayed on the top of the General Lee. And not in any kind of racist context at all. Obviously, clearly, the fucking TV show has been on TV for whatever, 40 years. And the insanity didn't stop there. It continued. Amazon was removing app games, Civil War reenactment app games that used the Confederate flag in their cover art. So this is the context surrounding this tragic shooting. You know, this Dylan Roof guy is a fucking sicko, and he deserves 10 deaths for what he did to the innocent people in that church. But what we're talking about, the reason that we are going to step off into an alternate reality, is the people in the Bizarro Fiction community, when my hackles were raised and I was saying, Jesus fucking Christ, you're going to remove the Confederate flag off of everything? You're going to try to, you know, remove, you know, erase it from history? What the fuck? And you're supporting it. And these the editors, these Bizarro Fiction and horror editors, influential, big time, influential horror editors, were coming to my social media as I was protesting this blatant display of censorship. were coming in and again arguing semantics. Amazon is a private company and they're allowed to sell or not sell whatever they want. And they were like celebrating in this snide, just, they were reveling.
They were the Christians in the 80s.
They were reveling in the 80s and 90s, right? They were reveling in the idea that quote-unquote racists were finally getting theirs. This idea that they hate racists so bad that they would like to see the marketplace censored just as a way to get at racists, just as a way to get back at racists, as a, and some of the arguments that these crazy people were coming onto my social media and arguing with me. Well, I grew up around racists, motherfucker. I grew up in fucking Wood River, Illinois. I grew up around people.
Grow up around racists.
I grew up around those people that literally flew battle flags off the back of their pickup trucks and drove around drinking fucking beer. And I don't like those people. I don't get along with those people. But I would never, ever, ever try to remove their right to do that.
I mean, the whole point is let people see them in society. Let the society judge. And we have. Almost nobody's like, well, look at that cool guy down there with the rebel flag. I bet he's a very popular fellow.
Right.
No, they just blow him off as, look at that asshole, or...
So, I'm flabbergasted at this point. I can't get it through these people's heads. So, I start trying to argue on social media. Again, arguing on social media is one of the stupidest things you can do. People will always take your words out of context. They won't understand
like
your meaning.
Arguing with a pigeon.
They will go out of their way to not understand your inflection or context. They will simply take the words as they're displayed, however they choose to, in the worst possible light, in the worst possible context, and they will try to paint you if you come out as opposed to the censorship of anything in the marketplace, then they will label you a racist. So suddenly I'm a racist. Suddenly I'm a racist because I'm against the removal of this flag from Amazon. Why? Because I'm against the removal of anything from Amazon. The Amazon marketplace, the Amazon marketplace is one of the biggest, if not the biggest, consumer marketplaces in the world. For Amazon to start making moral judgments on their products as opposed to letting the best products and the most popular products sell, but to make a moral judgment and decide based on this ridiculous outrage over a flag, to let that kind of pressure decide what they will and will not sell in their marketplace sets an insane and dangerous precedent that I could not, no matter how hard I tried, get through the heads of these editors. Because no matter how I tried to present what I'm about to present to you in the context of social media, I was just met with, yeah, but racism. But you just sound racist. But what you're saying just sounds racist because the battle flag is racist. So therefore, you're racist. It was just this fucking SJW fucking circle. This fucking politically correct circle.
Because, you know, they've all experienced the same thing the other way with Christianity in this country.
So when the Columbine shooting happened in the 90s, remember, the Parent Television Council and the Christian Coalition both called for the wholesale censorship of first-person shooter video games because in their Dylan Klebold and Eric Harris's videotapes that they made a mini documentary with the lead up to the Columbine shooting, and they were literally bragging about practicing killing their classmates by playing Doom online, or no, not online but on their computer. And so what did we as liberals do back then? We said, oh, there's no, you know, just because crazy people play video games doesn't mean video games make you crazy. But just owning a battle flag makes you racist, even though it was a crazy person that was holding a battle flag. You see where it's this double standard, this hypocrisy, whenever it comes. And this is what social justice does to us. This is the entire idea of cultural Marxism. Cultural Marxism gets into a community and plays find the bigot, whack the bigot, find a way to divide and conquer communities. And so we're going to jump through a portal now, and I'm going to walk us through what the type of devastation.
So we're going back to kill Hitler. we're just going to talk about bullshit all day. But go on, let's jump through this portal.
We're going to jump through this fucking portal, and we're going to go through how devastated the small press fiction community would be had Dylan Roof held up an Edward Lee novel instead of the Confederate battle flag. So now the same thing happens. Same thing happens in South Carolina, except in this alternate dimension, the only thing that's changed from our reality here is that this mass murderer, this evil piece of shit, holds up an Edward Lee novel instead of the Confederate battle flag. Edward Lee is an infamous, hardcore horror, extreme horror, splatterpunk author who came to fame in the 1990s by writing some of the most reprehensible, violent, cruel, rapey novels that have ever been written. He's still considered to this day to be the king of hardcore horror. And the same exact editors that were called, that were literally sneering and laughing and trying to use my words out of context and argue semantics with me about Amazon censoring the rebel flag, make a living, literally pay their bills off of the royalties from Edward Lee books. Had Dylan Roof held up the Edward Lee novel, people would have
Said rape culture?
Western civilization in general would have dug into who is this Edward Lee character? Who, you know, why was this killer obsessed with this cult author? Did this author's writings, this depravity, this cruelty, this hashtag rape culture author, this author that writes Lovecraftian horror? Did you know H.P. Lovecraft was a racist?
Oh, no. Yeah, we were talking about that earlier, and I was like, well, it doesn't sound like he was a racist. It sounded like he lived in a time of racism, and some of it did bleed in, but he didn't directly attack people, from what I've seen.
One of Edward Lee's biggest claims to fame is his Lovecraftian fiction, is the fact that he writes Lovecraftian pastiche. You know what he injects into Lovecraft fiction? Racist. You know what he injects into... So Lovecraft's fiction is already considered by SJWs, and I have an article coming out later this month all about Lovecraft/modern-day racism connection. But do you know what Edward Lee injected into what people already consider racist literature? He injected rape and ultra-violence. H.P. Lovecraft didn't write... If you read H.P. Lovecraft stories, his characters were almost to a one asexual. There are almost no women in his stories. There's no sexual attraction histories. There's no love stories. It's all about academics that are poring over occult texts and science texts, and then they end up with these revelations.
Repressing races. That's well, why they think he's racist, right? I mean, I'm not the biggest... Lovecraftian.
Yeah, there's a story like The Shadow Over Innsmouth that's about these fish monsters, these frog fish monsters. They come up out of this water world and they kidnap the women and they rape them basically it's interbreeding. They use humans to interbreed to keep their species going. And this was a thinly veiled Lovecraft commentary on immigration and how immigration was dulling out the pure American bloodlines. So Edward Lee took that racist, quote-unquote racist literature one step further and injects ultra-violence and rape into it. So now you have racist rape literature. So this Dylan Roof character is holding up this book saying, I'm going to kill all these people because this author's rape and racism has brainwashed me, has influenced me into doing this. And he went on his mass shooting spree because of all the vile filth, ultra violence, just depraved murder and rape, incest. Edward Lee loves to write about inbred redneck rape, and he injects, like I said, he injects it with the Lovecraftian cosmic horror also. So the culture clearly culture, the Western culture isn't going to stand for this, right? They aren't going to stand for Edward Lee to exist in the marketplace in the same way that they wouldn't stand for the Confederate flag to exist in the marketplace after the events, right?
But then you're talking art, though.
What's the difference? The difference between a symbol of a historical symbol and an artistic symbol?
The loud, squeaky wheels are generally on a certain side. We've seen this in the last 8 years in our culture. Nobody stood up for a lot of different things in the last 8 years of our culture because the people that normally stand up for them are on that side. So, I don't know if you would hear it, even in an alternate dimension. I think that...
You wouldn't hear it from the liberals so much as you would hear it from the conservatives. So, in this world, in this alternate dimension, the Christian Coalition and the Parent Television Council suddenly rush back into relevance.
And as soon as they did that, the side that's that was on this other side in the other dimension.
They're going to defend.
It's art.
It's just art, it's though, just right? Art. In the same way that they defended video games in the 90s, well, right? Yeah, the same way art. They defended Doom and Marilyn Manson. Marilyn Manson calls for people to kill themselves. Marilyn Manson calls for violence. Marilyn Manson uses racial epithets in his music. It's the same. They would fall on these same people. These same fucking editors would fall on their knees and beg and plead, please, it's just our art. It's just our art. But let's say they didn't get their way. Let's say that this event was what catapulted.
And they actually started taking his literature out of the
let's say,
or
yeah.
Anything that was like.
Let's that. Say that in the same way that in the 90s, the Parent Television Council and the Christian Coalition had influence over advertisers, let's say they suddenly rushed back into relevance because of this murder, because of the Edward Lee novels, and they were able to influence Amazon.com.
Oh, they'd be now, calling us all fascist, and everybody now, a fascist nation because you can't get rid of this. That's not right. You can't just hide this history. You cannot just hide this art.
But let's say they did. Let's say again, because we let's just say that let's just say that the that this conservatives win, and now
and they wouldn't shut up. And now conservatives won an election. And now, they're still out
protesting. We're in an alternate dimension. And in this alternate dimension, the SJWs and the liberals have lost their power, and the Christians have that moral majority again, and now Amazon is going to cave to the pressure of the conservatives. Amazon.com is going to cave to the pressure in the same way they actually did this once. Even in this crazy ultra-liberal world, there was a book that was released around 2013. It was a pedophile's how-to guide that was listed, and it was just a straight-to-Kindle book, and it somehow got through the filters, and it was this pedophile how to fuck kids book. And when it was found on Amazon, there was clearly and demonstrably an outcry to have this fucking thing removed because it was vile and it was an outline for how to commit crimes. So Amazon pulled it down. But Amazon didn't stop there. Amazon went through its algorithm for its Kindle only erotic section and wholesale gutted it. Thousands of titles were removed and accounts were suspended from people who used terms like sister, teen, daughter, son, brother. These terms that were used in the description of the erotic books on Amazon. Amazon wasn't going through and reading books and deciding in context what kind of material was objectionable and what kind of material was safe. They went through keywords and used a keyword algorithm to take out books that were completely innocent of any kind of crime.
In that same world, this incident that we're talking about, this fictional world, it would remove most of the horror genre.
Wouldn't it?
Yeah.
So, first of all, what's it going to remove? It's going to remove all 50 Edward Lee novels, right? Yeah. But any book with Edward Lee in it. So now all anthologies that Edward Lee has done a foreword for, or has done an author's note
and
for?
And most likely any of the authors that are in those anthologies, because they'd be guilt by association. Because
it's just an algorithm, right? Yeah, they're just yanking those anthologies down. They're going to yank the authors involved in those anthologies. What about the publishing houses that publish Edward Lee? I would say all of the... So everything that's on these editors that argue with me about battle flags and about this context with which we should remove this racist thing, well... Amazon would go through and just use this algorithm
just
to...
Just like what you're talking about. I'm sure that there was a... Like, I wonder if R.L. Stine's books were removed when the how-to pedophile, because it says sister, incest. I mean, if you know... Is it R.L. Stine? No, it's not R.L. Stine. It's Andrews.
Yeah, V.C. Andrews. V.C. Andrews. That was a big contention back then, because people were saying, this isn't fair. You're not removing V.C. Andrews, which is full of incest, underage incest. But you're removing this stuff. And it was because they were just going through keywords. And if you look very carefully at the V.C. Andrews summaries, they go out of their way to avoid saying, hey, this is a bunch of fucking incest. This is incest. Incest or bust. They don't go out.
Genetically related people.
They go out of their way to not advertise. And in the same way, these publishers go out of their way not to advertise the fucking massive amounts of rape in Edward Lee's books. And if people really, if the hardcore SJW culture ever really got a whiff of how much rape is in Edward Lee's books and in the authors that are directly related to Edward Lee in the extreme horror genre, they would cry hashtag rape culture so fucking loud. And what I'm saying is the entire extreme horror fucking genre would tank overnight because 99% of these people's sales come from Amazon.com. And if Amazon.com suddenly created an algorithm that turned that shit off because a mass shooter or a mass rapist bragged about being a fan of Edward Lee's work, you would be in the same situation. Now, let's say it's not an alternate dimension. Let's say it's happening right here in our dimension. They've already done that with the fucking Confederate battle flag. So say in this world where...
Yeah, but racist.
In this Dylan Roof world, in post-Dylan Roof, post-Confederate flag has been removed from Amazon, post fucking TV Land has removed the Dukes of Hazzard from their schedule. If a mass rapist was caught right now today and bragged that his inspiration was all the fucking endless rape in Edward Lee novels, they would use the battle flag censorship as a precedent to gut the extreme horror community. And these same fucking small-minded dweebs arguing with me on social media about it's racist if you support the battle flag would be out of a fucking job. They would be back in fucking Subway asking you what kind of fucking cheese you want on your sandwich. Just Mr. Victim, can you believe they tried to correlate this mass rapist's crimes with the horror authors I get paid to publish. It's such a travesty. Yeah. What a travesty.
I mean, anytime you're dealing with any kind of fascist, I mean, we've known from the most famous fascists of our time period, of this modern culture, they start coming for one person, and everybody says, well, they're not coming for me. Then they start going after another type of person. Not coming for me. I mean, until they're actually coming for you.
And that's the dangers of cultural Marxism, of political correctness, of social justice, is that they start with a precedent and then they keep turning the screws. Well, where's the bigot now? Well, where's the bigot now? Well, where's the bigot now? One of the most famous SJWs during the Gamergate scandal was Anita Sarkeesian, and she is quoted many, many times as saying, everything is racist, everything is sexist.
If you look at it that way, keep justifying yourself.
With the social justice cult-like echo chamber bubble that they live in, they use insane confirmation bias to find bigotry in every corner of every culture.
The whole anti-racist viewpoint, once it's took to an extreme, is racist. All of a sudden, you may be going after the majority this time, but you're going after the majority because they're white, they're male.
Absolutely. You're starting with their race and their gender, and then making sweeping judgments based on that.
Which is pretty much the definition of racism.
It's exactly what the definition of racism is. And with that, we are going to get out of here for the week.
Yay.
Remember, we're going to throw to a Patreon ad. I always try to do a Patreon.
Give us some money.
I always try to do a Patreon plug at the end, but we jump immediately into a Patreon ad, so we're going to leave you guys alone. We will be back next week where we are going to discuss another controversial topic.
And what is that?
We are going to talk about, I believe the episode is called Survival Guide, Pop Culture Convention Survival Guide for White Guys.
Ooh.
Because I believe single white men are being targeted wholesale with these ridiculous accusations of
white privilege, Kevin.
At these conventions, these single white guys are being targeted with these ridiculous notions of harassment, with these ridiculous notions of stalking. Basically, if a white guy looks at a girl the wrong way, she's fucking lighting him up with her social media, tagging him, and getting all of her friends to dogpile onto him. We're going to a convention in March.
Oh, shit.
So we're going to talk about the white guys.
I'd be a horrible person and have a crush on a girl.
we're gonna talk about the white guys' survival guide to pop culture conventions on the next Reading to Strangers. Remember, gang, keep reading.
All music featured on the Reading to Strangers podcast provided by Kevin MacLeod at Incompetech.com. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0. http://creativecommons.org/license/by/3.0/.